This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine, where a portion of this interview will appear in print. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 26th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm very pleased to have with me today Adam Shostak. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Gary.
Adam Shostak is a member of Microsoft's Secure Development Lifecycle team. He's a very well-respected security expert who's worked for Zero Knowledge as Most Evil Genius and Reflective, where in his role as CTO, he focused on static analysis for software security. Adam has a blog called Emergent Chaos at www.emergentchaos.com, and he recently co-authored a book, The New School of Information Security, with Andrew Stewart, who doesn't admit that he works for Morgan Stanley. Adam is an international man of mystery, but Silver Bullet has determined that he has some degree or other from Bard College at Simon's Rock. So let's get started.
Okay.
What on earth got you interested in computer security? And did it have anything to do with what you studied in school, if you did in fact study in school?
I did in fact study in school, and I think what actually got me started in computer security was Frank Abagnale's book. I was maybe 8 or 9 when Catch Me If You Can came out, and I was enthralled by the way in which Abagnale gained an understanding of how the financial system worked, where the checks and balances were, where the security policy was implemented, and then how to bypass it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just captured my imagination at a young age.
Is that what turned you into an evil genius in the first place?
I think I would hate to blame Frank for that. But so, to the other half of your question, what I studied in school, I was going to be an environmental scientist.
Uh-huh. And so how does that inform your work as a computer security guy?
Well, I think there's two elements. One is the multidisciplinary nature.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental science is not biology. It's not ecology. It's the intersection of those fields with public policy, mm-hmm. economics. And so when I was studying how, for example, we might clean up the air pollution, there were all sorts of lessons in economics and public policy and public choice theory that actually I think I apply very directly to computer security.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that you've chatted with Dan Gere about his idea of what I called the security renaissance, the notion that we have so many people with so many diverse backgrounds that it's a great time to be in security.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that a field does better when there's a plethora of different ideas and different approaches, when you have a diverse toolbox of ways that people have approached problems in the past and ways that you can bring them to bear on the problems that you're facing.
So you seem to have an artistic bent, even more so than some geeks. I bet you really like GEB, for example. How does your interest in art and literature inform your work?
That's an interesting question. And I've thought about this. I'm not sure how to formulate it, except perhaps that art can remind us that we're human, or inform how people interact with each other. A lot of the focus of, you know, any good novel has at its heart some sort of conflict between two people or multiple people or a person in themselves, and how they think about that and how they resolve that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the end of the day, as security professionals, it's easy to talk about technology, but we're doing this because of the impact that security issues or a lack of security, or that good security have on people and the way they interact with the world.
Mm-hmm. I think that maybe there's some aspect of analogy and metaphor in art that can help inform our work as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that what you said in the beginning of your answer, this, I'm not sure how to explain it, but kind of captures it. So speaking of art, at RSA, I bought a copy of your book for its cover, which features a print from Kandinsky in his less formal, kind of more musical phase. Mm-hmm. And the plan was to give your book to my Kandinsky fan friend, which I ended up doing. But I started reading it on the way to delivering it, and I found out it's really very interesting.
Well, thank you.
So I thought it would be nice for you to tell us briefly about the new school, what the basic huge idea behind the book is.
So I think there are three big ideas in the book. The first big idea is that there's this conversation which has moved away from technology. When you and I were getting started in security, actually I'm not sure this is when you got started, but I remember reading the work that you were doing with people like Ed Felton attacking Java.
Yeah, that was back in my very early days, 1995 is when I
got
started.
And I did some work and I attacked the Security Dynamics Secure ID protocol,
mm-hmm,
and the way that went back and forth. And we were very technology focused. And I think as we've solved some of the technology problems, we've gotten to a point where the interesting problems are more related to human beings and the way that they intersect with the technology rather than the technology itself.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true of software too, you know.
I hate to speak about something so broadly as software, but I think the interesting things in software are now how do you intersect it with a business process.
Exactly right. That's what I meant. Yep.
The second big idea that we present in the new school is that if we're going to succeed, we need to actually test our ideas about what it is we should do. It's not enough to say, I am a smart guy, or you are a smart guy, and therefore you will come up with the right answer of how to address this problem. We need to be able to, like scientists, test our ideas and understand whether or not they're actually having the impact that we'd like them to have.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be able to test our processes and say, for example, if you'd like to deploy a security awareness program, does it actually change people's behavior at the end of the day, if that's its goal?
Right. So a little bit of empiricism.
A little bit of empiricism. And then the third big idea is that we don't actually have the data that we need to test our ideas because we're very afraid to talk about things that go wrong.
I see.
And in being unwilling to discuss what goes wrong, we find ourselves making similar mistakes over and over again. And so the new school is really this idea that we need to discuss what's happening. We need to be willing to discuss our successes and our failures. And we need to analyze what we're doing in such a way that we can advance the science and advance the state of the art.
Mm-hmm. So you hearkened back to the 90s. Back then, security research in the scientific literature, which is peer-reviewed,
mm-hmm,
and empirical, theoretically, really changed radically, in my view. You know, I was there to witness this and to participate in the Java security front, as you mentioned. And I think that the change in the research community was fundamental and pretty permanent. And I wonder if you agree with that and whether the new school is kind of a continuation of that process that started in the research community and is now getting wider and wider and spreading into commercial security.
Could you say a little bit more about how you perceive that change?
Absolutely. So, for example, when I got started in 95, I was reading papers about multi-level security, about database security, and reviewing the transactions of what was going on, say, at Security and Privacy in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wrote a paper about software fault injection that was about how to break stuff. And the committee had a really hard time with that paper because it was breaking something.
Well,
and the same thing with the Hot Java paper that Felton wrote with Dan Wallach and Drew Dean, which was really about a new technology and how it was broken. And, for a while, there was this kind of repositioning around the scientific literature about how you talk about how to build things and how you talk about how to break things. And it became much more empirical and a little bit less about these kind of spook systems that people had been working on in cryptography.
Well, I think there's still value to understanding some of the fundamental early work. Salzer and Schroeder, Biba, Bell, LaPadula.
Yep.
Understanding these things is great, and I think that the empiricism is the growing awareness that we needed to actually test these systems. It wasn't sufficient to say, I'm going to prove that this system has this property.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, as the system is moved from a description of an algorithm to an implementation, does it retain the properties that you think it retains?
Well put.
And then does it actually deliver in the real world?
Yep.
The properties that the customers want.
So my feeling is that exact thing happened in the mid-90s, but only in the scientific community, and now the new school is a reflection of the widening of that kind of wave.
I think some of it happened in the scientific research community. I think some of it happened in the applied hands-on research community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the interesting things which has grown out of that is this beginning of a taxonomic effort to analyze the ways in which attacks actually succeed, that we can talk about stack smashes and heap overflows and integer overflows is a result of a growing corpus of examples.
Yep.
If you think back to, say, the way the Royal Society started out, they were collecting all sorts of bizarre things. They were going and trying to expand the scope of the universe that they could look at,
mm-hmm.
and say, here's a duck-billed platypus. What the heck is that?
We still aren't sure what the heck is that. I read something the other day about them trying to sequence those genes and find mm-hmm. out what the heck is that.
The reductionist analysis, and I don't mean to slam gene sequencing in any way. It's brilliant. It's wonderful. It's useful. But just knowing what those genes are is not enough to understand how it all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And what the heck this duck-billed platypus is.
So magazines like IEEE Security and Privacy try to make security science of the sort that you're describing practical and useful. And I'm wondering what role magazines like that have in the new school. Have you thought about that? And, you know, a magazine like S&P versus, say, a trade magazine?
I haven't thought incredibly deeply about what role IEEE S&P should play, but my feeling is that there's tremendous room for analysis of the data that we have, and there's a tremendous amount of room through the choice of editorials and the choice of news to help shape the way people perceive what's going on. One of the examples I've been coming back to a lot recently is what happened to Tylenol in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Someone put cyanide in their capsules. People died. And the makers of Tylenol took on that problem. They engaged with the public. And the company is still in business, even though they are not able to explain. You know, no one was ever caught and prosecuted for the crime.
Mm-hmm.
The problem which they experienced, and I don't mean to say this in a way which diminishes the very real pain people experience when their systems are broken into, but most computer security incidents don't actually lead to death.
Yep.
And
you can conceive of ways in which they could, but most of them haven't happened.
Most of them have not happened. And if Tylenol is able to spring back, and actually it's used as a case study in crisis management now, mm-hmm. are we really, should we really be so unwilling to discuss the things that are going wrong for us today?
That's a good example. So here's kind of an easy one, but it's also a kind of a deep question. Why do you think that the new school is radical? Why is it new?
It's new because, well, actually, before I say why it's new, I want to make clear that when we talk about the new school of information security, what we're doing is we're capturing and trying to help shape some conversations that are going on mm-hmm. in the field.
Right.
That people, and, you know, I look to the workshop on economics and information security as a prime example of this.
Yes, Ross and I talked about that in an early episode of Silver mm-hmm. Bullet.
And so we're applying economics, and Bruce Schneier has started to talk about psychology. And there's this trend towards empiricism. And what we're trying to do with the new school is not to claim inventorship over all of this, but we're trying to pull forward these possibly disparate threads and turn them into, if you will, a tapestry, and say, if you take the empiricism and if you take the willingness to draw on other sciences and the need for a diverse toolbox, then what you get is not the sum of its parts, but you get something that's greater.
Mm-hmm. So one of the key tenets of the new school is to get good data and analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys used the card systems breach, in which about 40 million card numbers were compromised, as an example in several places in the book. And so I thought it might be good to use that to turn our attention to regulation a little bit. Though Card Systems complains that they, quote, followed Visa rules to the letter, unquote, they were still compromised. Mm-hmm. Isn't the problem a focus on the letter of PCI versus the spirit of PCI?
I actually don't believe it is. And that I think the difficulty with regulation is that, let's say you or I were advising Card Systems. We would start out by saying, comply with the PCI requirements because you have to by contract. And then they say, well, what else should we do? And you might have some advice. We might even agree on some of this advice that they should engage in a program to analyze the security of their source code, of the custom software which they are building.
But the spirit in this case would be the notion of wanting to protect customer data because it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And their customers expect
so
it.
Where I'd like to go is the question of how should you, no one has infinite resources, so how do you allocate your resources most effectively?
Right.
And I don't believe that we have a defensible answer.
Uh-huh.
We could sit down and argue at great length anything you would like to propose. I could find a way to undercut, and anything that I would like to propose, you could find a way to undercut, because neither of us has data that shows 100 organizations did X and 100 organizations didn't do X.
Right.
And the ones that did X suffered 96% less break-ins.
Well, it's kind of like psychology before statistics.
Yes. And so when you ask what should Card Systems have done differently, it's very easy to exhort and suggest that they should have done more, but it's very difficult to justify the spending on what more they should have done and select what it is that they should have done. And I think that raises a real dilemma for a regulator who might want to exhort people to do more and to spend more. But the regulator also wants an efficient market in which people invest their money well.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that you should invest your money in, say,
application firewalls.
application firewalls or security awareness training or password change policies. How do the organizations which have these things compare to the ones that don't?
Right.
And without an answer to that, when you sit down and say, let's put more regulation in place, I want to say, well, hang on.
I tend to agree with that. I'm just trying to understand whether it's even possible to try to capture spirit in a simple regulation, which seems to always devolve to letter very quickly.
I think it may be possible to capture the spirit. I think it may be easier, and I'm not an accountant, but I'll go out on a limb here. We used to have a relatively simple set of accounting principles,
mm-hmm.
which have been, and the goal of the accounting principles was to provide high-level guidance to ensure that someone reading the accounts of an organization could understand its financial position. And as we've tried to become more and more prescriptive to address the ways in which people have done bad things, the ability to understand accounting principles becomes harder and harder.
Right, so we get principles versus particular
mm-hmm.
prescriptive guidance. But then we still end up with Enron.
well, we do. And, you know, surgeons make mistakes. There are awful stories of instruments left in people, or a few years ago, someone had the wrong leg amputated.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So saying there's Enron and asking for a set of laws that will, sure, it's easy to pass a law that prohibits another Enron. Just forbid Ken Lay from becoming CEO again. And you don't have another Enron. You might have something very similar. So you look to the accounting practices, or you look to the way in which the company operated. But at the end of the day, I believe that what happened with Enron was that people chose to commit a fraud.
Right. And then they did it.
And then they did it.
So I wanted
to... already illegal.
I wanted to ask you a couple questions about software security before we run out of time.
Sure.
You spent some time in software security when you were at Reflective, and of course in your role at Microsoft now you're mm-hmm. doing that too. What do you think of the SANS idea of certifying developers as secure coders?
I think it's an interesting idea. And the empiricist in me would love to actually see what happens when an organization which has certified its developers compares to an organization which is investing its money in other ways.
Oh, that'd be super. I'd like to see that too.
So, you know, for example, at Microsoft, we don't have certification or tests, but we do have a process that all of the code goes through. And so rather than focusing on the developer, we focus on the output.
Right.
Which is better. I have my personal opinion that focusing on the output is a good idea. And I'm glad that we're seeing experimentation and people are doing these things. And I hope we'll get interesting data.
That's a good answer. So in your book, you also eviscerate the term best practice, which I think is hilarious. But I'm not sure what we should call whatever those things are. So the question is, what are the things that everybody agrees we should do for software security? If you stand back from the touch points and SDL and, you know, CLASP,
don't you think
there's some things we all sort of agree on?
I do. And I think there's a set of things which we might call received wisdom, or we might call evolved practice. We might even call it best practice. My trouble with the term best practice is that it means so many different things, and it's such an easy label to apply to something.
It's probably the best part that you don't like.
It's the lack of testability.
Uh-huh.
It's that people, I think of backups as a great best practice.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely things which are simply so sensible and so reasonable that they are best practices that if you're not doing them, there's a question. And then there's a tremendous set of things which people have put the best practices label on, which I don't think qualify, and I don't think people often enough challenge the assertion that this is really a best practice, that it's really been through that testing
right.
and honing and validation.
Well, maybe you guys can help with some data from the SDL results.
That's possible. There's some difficulty in doing that because even between different teams,
oh, I know. Yep.
You have different practices, and I'll give you a personal example of just one of my current challenges in gathering data. Is someone came and said, "I'm trying to threat model this component." We went back and forth through email a couple of times. We analyzed the problem a little bit. And they went out and they had a decent threat model at the end of all of that. How do I capture data about the fact that their initial design, their whiteboard level design,
was wrong or crazy? Yeah.
Had some issues.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
And, I want people to go ahead and fix their designs more than I want to spend the energy to capture the data. So again, it becomes where do you put your resources and where do you put your energy?
Yep. We have a ways to go in our field.
Yeah. Well, I prefer in that to get the thing fixed and not have as much data because that's the right result.
You're going to get kicked out of the new school.
No. I can go to the end of the process and count design issues that make it all the way to the end. I just can't do the precision measurement at the beginning.
So one last question, from left field. It appears that you like Infinite Jest way more than the crying of Lot 49. So what, are you nuts?
I think Infinite Jest should be a hacker classic.
You just like it because it was about your neighborhood.
Well, there is the bizarre coincidence that I lived in Cambridge, Mass, where a good chunk of it is set, and then moved from there to Montreal. But really, I like it because it's recursive in so many different dimensions. It's recursive in that the book is infinitely long and is a joke about an infinitely long set of jokes. I like the recursive footnoting and the way the footnotes refer to one another within a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I
still like the little trumpet from The Crying of Lot 49.
I'm confused as to why you think I didn't like The Crying of Lot 49.
I just get to throw these questions out so I can, make false accusations, and then that's the last word.
All right. Well, thank you.
Well, thanks. That's been fun.
You have. Thank you.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. The May-June 2008 issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine is a special issue on electronic voting, edited by Avi Rubin and David Jefferson. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Sigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. Silver Bullet is syndicated by Inform IT. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.